right, this is Pure Decking, show number 515 for Thursday, April the 13th, 1743. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and the loose sanity that results from a lack of sleep. I have no alcohol because I just spent the last half hour trying to fix a fucking broadcast box. I don't even have water. So this will be interesting. We have a madman. What's up, madman?
Well, I've got bourbon and water and a strong dislike of Karens.
Who doesn't have a strong dislike of Karens anymore?
So you had one of them cause the cops to SWAT your place of employment.
No, not recently. guessing you don't want
to... I can top you.
Huh?
I can top your Karen experiences then.
Yeah, I just worked at a grocery store back in the day, so I've experienced plenty of them. But they SWATted where you work?
Yeah.
Are you going to be pursuing a lawsuit against this person for false police report?
I don't think so.
Oh.
But yeah, a false report of an active shooter.
Wow.
And you know where I am and what has recently happened around here.
You know, one of the stories I looked at for decking and ultimately dropped was that somebody's put together a script with AI voices that will call and try to automate swattings. I guess, you know, because you want to be able to get a lot of these done. But just, I wasn't going to do the story because it's like, okay, it's an annoying application of various technologies, but it's nothing really new. They're just using AI to generate the voice and VoIP to make the call. But, yeah. It's just like, jeez.
It can cost about 2 hours of lost productivity, depending on the size of the complex.
Oh, it's going to get to be a real problem if people keep doing this shit. Because cops will start ignoring calls eventually, and then they'll ignore a real one. Maybe that's the goal. Who knows?
So, yeah, I'll tell you the full story off air, but it's interesting.
All right. Yeah, I don't blame you. So I guess we'll get into it here. The first article I got, it's from Torb Freak. And so it's obnoxious, but here we go. Last week, a German court ruled that Uberspace is liable for hosting the website of YouTube DL, an open source tool that allows people to download content from YouTube. The owner of the hosting company warns that this ridiculous and devastating verdict opens the door to privatized censorship. And I think he's got a point. So here, the full article. In 2020, the RIAA infuriated many players in the open source community by targeting YouTube ripping tool YouTube-DL. The RIAA sent a takedown notice to GitHub, alleging that the software bypassed technological protection measures in violation of the DMCA. GitHub initially complied, but later changed course. After consulting legal experts, including those at the EFF, it restored the YouTube DL repository. GitHub also launched a $1 million defense fund to assist developers in similar disputes. This episode was a massive setback for the music industry, which had been fighting stream ripping tools for years. However, instead of laying down their arms, the music companies went after Uberspace, YouTube DL's website hosting company in Germany. A few days ago, this lawsuit resulted in a clear victory for Sony, Warner, and Universal Music. The District Court of Hamburg essentially ruled that YouTube DL violates the law as it bypasses YouTube's technological protection measures. Going one step further, the court also concluded that as a host, Uberspace can be held liable for YouTube DL's activity. The hosting provider received a takedown notice for the website in the past, but continued to host it. According to Uberspace, the software wasn't clearly illegal, but the court ruled that the company should have known better. With the dust beginning to settle, Torrent Freak spoke with Uberspace owner Jonas Posch, who has decided to appeal the ruling. According to Posch, the court made a big mistake and could have far-reaching consequences. No shit. So
it's Not that they were hosting something that when they were hosting it was illegal. It's the court dubbed it illegal and then dubbed them guilty of hosting something illegal.
Correct. Because and YouTube DL, this has been going on for years. But YouTube DL, and hell, I was arguing with Suave about it before we did the show. You know, I don't think YouTube DL should be considered illegal. I don't think it's copyright infringement. But they're saying it's a technological circumvention of YouTube's countermeasures to downloading, which is URL guessing. There's how many browser add-ons out there for being able to download YouTube videos, not to mention websites that do it. So YouTube DL is hardly unique in that regard. It's basically figured out how YouTube makes its URLs. And so they're saying that's a technological countermeasure that this tool breaks, and thus it's an illegal tool. And I don't like the idea of an illegal tool in the first place, because the tool shouldn't be illegal. What you do with it is what you should be questioning, whether it's legal or not. It's sort of like, you know, oh, we've deemed that hammers could be used to harm people. So therefore, anyone who owns a hammer is now a criminal. It's like, well, what if I want to build something? No, you can't build anything. My God, that requires hammers, and hammers are dangerous things. So, I'm exaggerating the example a little bit. But
on the counter on that one, what legitimate purpose does YouTube serve?
Well, not all content hosted on YouTube is copywritten. So their legitimate purpose is it allows you to download content from YouTube that you believe you have a right to download. For example, if you've uploaded your own videos to YouTube, you could use it to download them back out of it to make it an archive. Say you've lost your local copies, or if you want to post them to a different hosting service later. If you're looking at a video that is in Creative Commons or some other permissive license that allows you to download and redistribute it, or if you're going to reuse the work in a way that means that serves fair use, such as doing commentary or educational use of a work, which is protected fair use under the law, YouTube DL might be a tool you could use to get the source video so that when you're making your derivative work of it that, you know, include within fair use, you know, that you get the cleanest copy you possibly can, rather than trying to do screen capture or, you know, other messy ways of getting stuff off YouTube. And again, you know, YouTube DL is hardly a unique tool. So, you know, it's not like they've cracked some horrible code here. They're, you know, it's not like they've, you know, got this massive thing they've done. But go ahead.
I've never actually uploaded anything to YouTube, but if you upload something to your own account, you can't download it back from it?
You know, I've not actually tried, but I've heard people say that they've had a hard time doing it. Especially because you can feed YouTube DL is a tool, so you could feed it a list of files. Within YouTube's interface, you might have to do it one file at a time, if you can even do it. So you can use YouTube DL to automate. And I do know that there are a lot of scripts floating around for things like Unraid and some of the other archivist tools that will use YouTube DL to monitor a set of channels, basically like a subscription, and whenever something goes up, they'll use YouTube DL to download their local copy. And there were scripts out there for doing transcoding of that local copy. So it's like, okay, I wanted to watch it on a media player. This is and it's a media player that for whatever reason doesn't support YouTube. You know, maybe they don't have an app for it, or it's some custom thing. And
or they just don't want to stream it from YouTube.
Yeah, they want to download it instead of streaming it. So, and, you know, arguably, YouTube DL is no different from a copyright standpoint of popping in a VHS tape and recording something off cable. Especially if you're not distributing it. So, is this really, you know, I mean, you can argue that it certainly has a use as a copyright violation tool. You know, they're saying that, well, clearly people are using, you know, the RIAA's argument would be that clearly people are using YouTube DL to rip music videos and TV shows off YouTube. And it's like, I don't know that YouTube's your primary source of that, but okay. Again, because if it's on YouTube, most anybody can just click a link and watch it anyways. Now, granted, that's within YouTube's ecosystem, so ads and, you know, click tracking and the like. But I would argue there are legitimate uses for a tool like this. You might think that they're not the strongest arguments, but there are uses for it. You know, why do you own those lockpicks? Because I've lost the key to my house, and this is how I get in and out of the house. Is it stupid? Yeah, a little bit, but, you know, it's an argument.
Yeah.
Again, well, the tool shouldn't be illegal. The use of it should be illegal.
You know, well, I'm not quite sure of that, because sarin gas is a tool. Can you think of a legitimate use other than killing people for it?
Fumigating a rodent-infested home, I guess. I mean, it's kind of overkill, but I can think of a use for it. How long does sarin gas hang around?
Hours.
Yeah, you know, you fumigate a house with it, kill all the pests. Just, you know.
Yep. In the neighborhood.
Well, no, if you're going to fumigate a house, you seal up the house. Haven't you ever seen a house be fumigated before?
Yeah, you don't know how potent a drop of sarin gas is. That's why I chose that one.
No, I don't. You're kind of picking an extreme example there, but, you know, that's fine.
Well, I'm pointing out that tools, and there are a lot of them that don't have a legitimate commercial use. So that's why I was asking, does this one actually have a use beyond something criminal? And if it does, then yeah, you shouldn't make the tool illegal. But if it does, willful blindness hasn't been a defense for ever, really.
Well, again, so we're not talking about sarin gas. We're talking about a tool that downloads YouTube videos.
Yep.
The legality of the tool was in question.
You know? Yeah, and that's why I think the host shouldn't have been countered, because at the time he was hosting it, it wasn't dubbed illegal.
GitHub and put it back up and was disputing that the tool was illegal. And the EFF said the tool is not illegal. So you have another hosting company and lawyers disputing the idea that the tool is illegal. And this court in Germany says, oh, no, you got a takedown notice. You didn't take it down. You're still liable. Even though,
is it illegal in Germany?
I don't know, because I don't know Germany's laws.
Okay. Well, from a U.S. standpoint, they're wrong. Because we already kind of settled that it wasn't illegal in our country.
What, the thing that bothers me is what they're saying is that because it could be illegal. Now, think about what this case means.
Yeah.
You know, they're saying that it wasn't clearly, you know, the argument is from Uberspace that the software wasn't clearly illegal, but the court ruled that the company should have known better. Even though you could point to other companies disputing the illegality of the tool, and they're saying that the court is saying that because the RIAA told you it was illegal, you should have taken their word for it, taken it down, and not questioned it.
And according to this other company, it wasn't illegal in Germany. And the court's just making it arbitrarily because the RIAA has told them it should be.
Right.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
So, okay.
And the reason I was bringing that up is there's the companies you're citing were U.S. companies, and our laws are different than Germany's laws. But if it wasn't illegal in Germany, or questionable, well, I don't even think something's questionable. It's either illegal or it's not. So if they haven't passed a law saying this is illegal, then the company that's hosting it shouldn't be penalized. Now, if the court says, okay, we found it should be illegal under this act, but it's ambiguous, so long as the company's given the option to take it down, they shouldn't be held liable.
Right.
And I mean, given the option of taking it down after the ruling happens.
Right, because that's kind of how Section 230 works, right? Is the hosting company is not liable until it's clearly... I mean, you know, again, we're not talking about something that anyone can look at and go, that's illegal. You know, there's certain, you know, images, for example, that are like that, right?
Yeah.
So, The article continues here. For starters, Posh doesn't believe that it's, or still doesn't believe that it's clear that YouTube deal violates copyright law. More importantly for his own business, however, is the court's finding that a hosting company can be held liable for doubting the validity of a takedown request. Now, we were talking about DMCA earlier. I don't know if you were on and heard any of that or not, Matt Ben. I used to deal with DMCA complaints pretty often. I would get DMCA complaints telling me to uninstall LimeWire from photocopiers. I would get DMCA takedown requests for content that could not possibly be what they're claiming it was. So doubting the validity of these things when you've gotten examples that are clearly wrong.
I mean, yeah. Well, that's one reason we have courts, is because we doubt the legitimacy of claims and contracts.
Well, that's
why we dispute them.
Right. So what there's basically, though, this court's argument that, well, they told you it was illegal, you should have immediately taken down, means that according to this judge in Germany, if the RIAA says it has to come off the internet, it has to come off the internet, by God. I mean, that is insane.
And Germany shouldn't be wanting to give away its sovereignty to a U.S. corporate conglomerate.
Okay, back into the article here. German law requires hosting companies to remove the content as soon as they learn about clear, obvious illegal activity. That's an easy decision in many cases, but Uberspace paused for thought in YouTube DL cases, presumably for good reason. Quote, just because somebody claims that something hosted with us is illegal doesn't necessarily need to be true. When we received the notice from the Roche law firm that we were hosting YouTube DL, which they claimed to be illegal, our first reaction was, really? Is it? Let's do some research. And boy, did we do some research. Starting with a simple Google search for YouTube download illegal, there are tons of sources, well-known, serious public magazines, basically all stating, yeah, it's totally illegal to download videos from YouTube. Uberspace knows that answers that appear through Google should be carefully weighed, so Uberspace continued looking for answers. The company reviewed YouTube's protection measures, for example, which didn't appear to involve any type of encryption for free and publicly available videos. Also, Uberspace couldn't find any claims from YouTube itself that their content has effective copyright protection. If anything, the company's searches suggested that the opposite was true. For example, GitHub eventually concluded that YouTube DL wasn't violating U.S. copyright law, a decision that was based on input from legal experts at the EFF. In addition, Uberspace consulted a lawyer in Germany who reached a similar conclusion. Quote, we got ourselves informed about fair use under German law. We even appointed a lawyer at our own cost who did his own research and came to the conclusion that what YouTube DL does is perfectly legal and covered by fair use, unquote, Uberspace owner tells us.
They did due diligence to protect themselves.
And the court still said, no, RIAA said it's illegal, you're liable. You see why I have a problem with this.
Yeah, the court's retroactively making something illegal or clarifying an existing law, both of those could be true. And then instead of going forward making it illegal, retroactively
they're not giving
going after another company.
Yeah, they're not giving them the opportunity to cure. They're not giving them the opportunity to react. They're just, oh, no, we've deemed it illegal, therefore you're responsible.
Yeah, and they have legal argument from Germany saying, no, it wasn't covered under here. Here's what our legal lawyers say.
We've got tons of research. We have a lawyer telling us that it probably wasn't illegal. We've at least got a good claim that it wasn't an immediate and clear take it down kind of thing.
Yeah, so we'll take it down now that you've ruled, but you shouldn't punish us is the correct statement here.
Based on...
Not saying that the ruling's correct, but this company's... stance on it, well, what should happen to this company is now that the court has ruled rightly or wrongly, they should have been given the option of taking this down before they were fined or penalized.
Based on its own investigation into YouTube DL, Uberspace decided to keep the website online. The company informed Roche, the music company's law firm, of its decision, which responded with some follow-up questions. For example, the law firm wanted to know how many times YouTube DL software had been downloaded. However, Uberspace couldn't answer the question because they didn't actually host the code. It's stored on GitHub. Quote, I guess they didn't like my answer, but that's their problem, not mine. How about asking GitHub for download numbers? We suggested that to them. I'm sure they didn't even ask over there, unquote. The biggest disappointment and threat ultimately comes from the court's conclusion that Uberspace is liable for YouTube DL's alleged wrongdoing because it failed to take the website offline. Apparently, Uberspace should have known that YouTube DL was illegal, even though it wasn't clear. Quote, this is illegal and it's this is ridiculous and it's devastating, unquote, Posh says, fearing that the court order will have a chilling effect on the hosting business. Quote, the consequences of this will be that the hosting providers receiving complaints will most likely kick out their customers without a court ruling for things that might be perfectly legal. Otherwise, they have to fear being held responsible by a court that might see things differently, unquote. In a way, the court order requires hosting companies to police their network, which requires weighing advanced legal issues that even legal experts have different opinions on. Ultimately, many hosting companies will take the cautious option and terminate customer accounts to avoid liability, because of course they will. Quote, this court decision basically takes away the option of staying neutral for a hosting provider, unquote, Posh says. Quote, they will be unable to say it might be unlawful, but it's not really clear. Let a court decide about this, and then until then we'll continue to host it. After all, we have a hosting contract to fulfill, unquote. In the future, they'll have to say it might be unlawful, so we better get rid of it without a court order. It's just too risky to insist on a court decision because we might face damages for helping with illegal activity. Posh also finds it bizarre that the court ordered Uberspace to answer various questions it cannot answer. This includes the number of YouTube DL downloads, which is information they don't have. There's a much more logical...
Yeah, because they're not downloading it. They're holding the tool...
They're
hosting that someone else is using to download it.
They're hosting the website. So in this case, what they're hosting is essentially the documentation and advertisements for the tool, which you actually get off GitHub. There's a much more logical target in the case in the form of GitHub, which actually hosts the software. For some reason, music companies have decided to go after Uberspace instead. Quote, GitHub isn't some shady, bulletproof... hoster located on some cozy island. It's a Microsoft-owned corporation. They have processes to deal with complaints. They have a legal team. They could perfectly block YouTube DL, even just in Germany, unquote, Posh says. Quote, what's the point of suing the hosting provider for a website pointing to that GitHub repo when they had perfectly established ways of filing a complaint with the hosting provider that actually hosts the software they want to see banned? Unquote. Music companies did approach GitHub earlier, of course, but went after Uberspace when their DMCA takedown was denied. According to Posh, the music companies chose to pick an easier target after the setback. Quote, it really looks like they just didn't want to face what they might regard as a real opponent, Microsoft. Instead, they're going for what they might have regarded as an easy target. This is exactly the behavior of bullies, unquote. Uberspace doesn't like being bullied, so it will continue to fight back through various appellate courts. In fact, the company is determined to fight this battle to the bitter end, whatever it takes. Posh believes that the recent court order effectively opens the door to increased censorship, and he hopes to shut that door again before it's too late. Quote, this is a shameful day for the freedom of speech. It's paving the way for privatized censorship. Do we as a society really want this? We strongly believe that we're on the right side of history here. Everyone except the music industry knows this, he concludes.
The reason they filed it against this corporation isn't just that they're smaller than Microsoft. It's their location. If they filed it against Microsoft, Microsoft would have fought them in the U.S., and we have a lot more protections regarding speech than the
and free and fair use under copyright.
So it's, crap, I should remember this term. I took a law class. It's effectively district shopping, but the term for legal, for courts is something other than district. I've been thinking a lot of congressional stuff lately. So, yeah.
I've heard of judge shopping.
It's effectively judge shopping. They went for, if we sue them in this court, we're more likely to win because the laws are more favorable to us. Now, the slight upside to them doing that in Germany is it shouldn't affect the U.S. We do have some activist judges that look at international law when international law has nothing to do with it.
The problem I see with this is, it is going to have a chilling effect on hosting companies, because you're not allowed to question whether it may or may not be illegal. If the court says it's illegal, you were responsible for it from the moment you decided to question whether it was illegal or not, which means anytime they get a complaint from a sufficiently well-represented institution, organization, or individual, anyone who could threaten to sue them with any, actual, resources behind it, they'll have to take it down, because they won't be able to, hosting companies won't be able to afford just the number of lawsuits this could generate.
In Germany and possibly the EU.
Well, in the States too, based off German law, because like you said, some judges look at that stuff.
That's an automatic appeal and technically not applicable. I'm just saying,
I would hope.
They're activist judges, so if you're worried about an activist judge, there's no law that's going to stop them, no principle that's going to stop them. That's what makes them activists. They ignore those.
Yeah.
So the issue is it's going to chill hosting in countries that already don't have free speech protections. We in the U.S., we don't realize how rare what we do is when it comes to being able to speak our mind. But yeah, it's going to chill everything in the EU.
And, it's also,
and especially
it's
Germany.
I mean, it's just a massive abuse of...
Yeah, they're like, we couldn't win in the U.S., so we're now going after this in Germany to see what we can do. And I can see them using this to try to pressure lawmakers in the U.S. to pass something. Like, look, it's the EU's doing it. In our next trade negotiation, we should adopt this. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Don't you want that nice campaign finance, that nice campaign donation? Yeah.
And then hopefully the Electronic Freedom Foundation's watching it and alerts everyone, and we put up enough of a stink to get stripped out of the negotiation. It's a constant, freedom is a constant fight.
Well, I don't know that I have anything else to add to that, just that, it's what it is. And I do worry about it having a chilling effect, though, so let's...
I'm worried about retroactively applying penalties to any business.
Yeah?
Because that's not just a copyright thing. That's, oh, well, weed wasn't illegal in this particular province. Now it is. Let's go after everyone that used to sell it. If Amsterdam decides to pull that kind of shit.
Oh, sure. I mean...
Fucked up applying stuff retroactively.
Yeah, I mean, Well, I mean, it's... You could... I mean, kind of ripe for abuse. Just see a company doing something you don't like, want to take all their resources, get a judge to agree with you that what they're doing is illegal, and just take it all from them. It's like, but... especially when it's questionable stuff like that. It's like, oh no, we're applying it retroactively. I mean, Jesus. So. Anyways. Let's continue the trend of companies being shitty. This one's from Ars Technica. The Google Assistant continues to suffer at the hands of Google's product shutdowns. The latest products to die are third-party Google Assistant smart displays. 9to5 Google was the first to spot this quietly posted notice on a Google Duo support page. Important, Google no longer provides software updates for these third-party smart displays. Lenovo Smart Display 7, 8, and 10, JBL LinkView, LG XBoom, AI ThinQ, WK9 Smart Display, this could impact the quality of video calls and meetings. We're pretty sure the announcement applies to every third-party Google Smart Display that has ever launched, so the product line is dead. Google's first-party smart displays like Google Nest Hub and Nest Hub Max aren't going anywhere for now and will be the only options on the market. Google Smart Displays put the Google Assistant on a screen and would support all the same commands that Google Assistant speaker, like the Google Home or Nest Audio would. Just say, hey, Google, in an attempt to recognize the command. The screen adds the ability to see visual accompaniment to the search results, usually either text, photo, slideshow, timer, media, or smart home controls. The system is a touchscreen, really basic user interface, blah, 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 blah. The smart display plan started in 2017 is Google's answer to devices like the Echo Photo Show, or the Echo Show. Google didn't launch its own display first and instead acquired a few third-party manufacturers to build the first devices. Google's plan with third-party displays always seemed a little odd. So pretty much, the devices aren't being immediately bricked. They won't get future updates, so they will eventually break. So, again, this is just Google saying, you know, abandoning a product line. So you bought one of these displays. These things weren't cheap, if I remember correctly. $200-$300. That's basically just Google saying, yeah, you know what? Sorry you spent money on it, but we're not going to support it anymore, so good luck. And then this is kind of the shitty thing about devices that have to have online support to do anything. Because if the online support goes away, they die. You know, we talked about Ubisoft just shutting down the servers for games, so you can't even play the single-player game anymore because they require the server up to run at all. So this is just taking things away from people who paid for them.
It's the problem with the Internet of Things. You automate your house, and then that company goes out of business.
Yeah, so it sucks to be you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's not saying...
an argument for a consumer bill of rights where it can be open sourced, it must be, whenever a company goes out of business like that.
Well,
just publish your code. We'll take care of it ourselves.
The problem is that if the company is that far out of business, getting the code published might be more than they can afford to do.
Yeah.
You know, if it's an immediate bankruptcy and everyone's laid off, who's going to publish the code, right? You could easily claim, okay, well, now your source code becomes public domain, but
it has to be put out there.
Yeah, and it'll never pass. But,
well, you should be able to at least no longer penalize reverse engineering it.
Well, they don't really penalize reverse engineering. Reverse engineering is legal. The best, you know, I mean, go look at the Tencent chip on the Nintendo for that kind of shit. And what they did to reverse engineer that was pretty shady. So, they, like, got a copy of the patent. I don't remember exactly how. Made some shit up to get a copy of the patent.
So, go down to the patent office. Those are public records, so you know whether or not you're breaking it.
So, but like I said, the video on Tencent reverse engineering the NES lockout chip is one of the best examples of that. But, you know, this is why emulators are illegal. The ROMs themselves may not be, but the actual emulator itself is legal because it's legal to reverse engineer things. So, but again, this really is consumer protection, but at least consumer education. Just understanding that if you're buying a device that requires, or software or whatever that requires a server on the back end to work, you need to know that, and you need to know that if it ever goes away, you lose access to the product. Now, you know, if you bought the thing in 2017 and discovered it's going away now, I mean, do you really care? You still got, 5 years of use out of it. But, I mean, so practically it may not be that big of a deal to you, but I don't like the idea of these devices just not working anymore because, screw you. We don't want to support it anymore.
It kind of depends on the device. I'm kind of old school. I remember when things lasted more than 5 years.
I don't know that
I've had cars that last fucking decades.
That's what I mean, though, is I don't know that anybody uses these things is going to be all that upset about it. I don't know how many people actually are still using these things.
Yeah.
It's yet another example of these, you know, mid-aughts, teens, I guess, but early online service stuff just dying off because the companies just don't want to support them anymore. And, you know, that's... I mean, we were seeing the stories about older consoles. You know, Nintendo just shut down a bunch of stuff for the Wii U and one of the Game Boys. And I know it's come up with some of the PlayStation stuff where Sony was shutting down servers. The old Xbox stuff, you know, the legend about how many people kept Xbox Live going for weeks on Halo 2, you know, before they finally got kicked off. It's like down to like the last guy on the Xbox servers, you know, before they finally disconnected him. But
I finally capped this. No one was around to stop me.
So, but I mean, it's just one of these things where at least understand that this is a possibility. I guess what I would like to see is if the companies are going to do these online-only things, that when you purchase it, that there's a guarantee that they're going to be running the service for a set amount of time. And of course, again, what can you do if a company goes bankrupt? I get that. But, you know, a lot of these companies aren't going bankrupt. They're just shutting stuff down because they don't want to deal with it anymore. So at least ought to have a sticker on the package that says we are going to support this for at least 5 years. You know what I mean? Something like that. So you at least know what you're buying. Because I think that's the big thing, is people don't know that it requires an online component to use it, or they don't think about that, and they don't realize that that means that, you know, they may not, it may not last all that long. You know, this isn't even the biggest example of doing this. You know, they did this with a bunch of the Nest stuff early on.
And I don't know how big the print is, but everything I've ever purchased that requires online actually does have it labeled on the outside of the box. Now, sometimes I would question how much they wanted me to know that with, you know, size of the very fine print.
Yeah,
but we do already do that part, at least.
Well, I mean, it says it requires an online component, but I'd like to see them say, and we promise we'll support it for however long. You know? Because that's the other question, is do you know how long they're going to support it when you buy it?
Yeah. I just know if you're not online, you can't play it.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't work.
Well, like with my 3D printing stuff, I absolutely refuse to use Fusion 360 for anything serious because of that. Because it's all online only all of the time. Same thing with Onshape. And you can store your files locally, but it does not make it easy. It really tries to force you to save everything to the cloud. And, you know, for what that costs, I'm not willing to do any design work on something that I just don't control like that, you know? I don't like it. And I know Adobe does the same thing. I try not to use any Adobe software. I use a bunch of Affinity? Affinity Design or Affinity Photo. I don't use Adobe stuff because I don't like the online-only model of where you're subscribing to your software. That's something that, you know, iPad apps have picked up lately and really ticks me off. It's like, I'm not paying $3 a month for a fucking text editor. So I just wish more people would not participate with that kind of stuff, so they'd move away from that model, saying that you know, it's not viable. Let's do something else. So, but anyways, you have any thoughts on that before we go into the next story, Medman?
No, I'm also against the software as a subscription model. I like owning things.
Well, what's the usual scuttlebutt? You'll own nothing and be happy. So,
yeah.
Next article is from Tom's Hardware, and it's just kind of funny. Performance-sapping conflict between Mozilla Firefox and Microsoft Defender was first discussed on Bugzilla half a decade ago. However, Firefox users can now rejoice as Mozilla devs and Microsoft work together to release an update to msmp.eng.exe, a core process of Windows Defender, which is currently being rolled out. Troubled users should notice significant improvement after the update, with a, quote, 75% improvement in CPU usage from msmp.eng.exe when browsing with Firefox. According to senior Mozilla engineer Yanis Ugler. So what's been happening is been an awful interaction between Firefox and Defender. Microsoft acknowledged a problem with it using too much CPU time when Windows Defender's real-time protection feature is spurred into action. This change has helped cut CPU usage observed by Firefox users significantly. The Firefox app was particularly hard hit by the Microsoft bug, as the browser is said to generate up to 7 times more event tracing for Windows events compared to competitors Edge and Chrome. It sends these virtual protect calls to the antivirus anti-malware provider to try to keep the browser safe from harm as it roams the web. Though Microsoft's patch of the executable helps a lot, as you can see from the above quoted figures, Microsoft devs acknowledge that we should try to reduce the number of events that Firefox generates, which will reduce the CPU usage from all AV software. With this in mind, it's also worth noting that other AV solutions, like those from Norton, will also consume a lot of CPU time due to the numerous Firefox calls for monitoring Virtual Protect. Thus, any program that calls Virtual Protect will benefit from Microsoft's new fix, not just Firefox. So, this is interesting, though, because what's essentially been happening is Firefox has been much more chatty to the operating system about when the antivirus should kick up and look in memory. So, this is probably a good thing from a security standpoint, right? You're trying to give the antivirus as many opportunities to catch bad behavior as you can in case, you click a drive-by download or bad JavaScript or God knows what else, right? So, this is good, but it's because the antiviruses have been inefficient with it, it's causing Firefox's CPU usage to be way, way up, which has just been... not great, and I've certainly noticed Firefox running a little better lately, so I think I must, after the... I think I got it with last month's update. It says they're still rolling it out, but we'll see. So, I think that's just... It's interesting.
I think it's bizarre that it took them 5 years to fix it.
There's probably arguments on both sides over who owns the bug. I mean, I see this kind of crap between vendors all the time at work, where you have each vendor point the finger at each other and both of them refuse to fix it. Either one could bend and give and fix it, but neither one wants to because nobody wants to admit that it was their problem. So I have certainly seen that. So I could easily see that stuff like that taking years where somebody finally looks at it and says, well, why don't we just fix it? You know what I mean? You have to rotate people out so whoever does it doesn't have that emotional investment of losing an argument, But
Dave retired. We can fix it now.
Yeah, basically. Son of a bitch. Something is not happy. I have to mess with that. I keep having PETG prints on this machine fail. I keep the pat detaching from the bed, and I don't really understand why, because they're making it far enough into the print that it's like it shouldn't be detaching, but it does. So, temperature's right. Squish on the part on the plastic looks good. I know, nobody cares but me. I'm just confused, that's all. I don't understand why these parts keep coming off the bed. So, anyways, Next article is from Gizmodo. We've talked about this a couple of times, so Microsoft is pushing it out to everybody. Microsoft is slowly rolling out ads in the Windows 11 Start menu. Microsoft's latest Windows 11 update, released on Tuesday, offered a few small bug and compatibility fixes, as well as a lighter taskbar. Oh, and a small number of Windows 11 users will now see notifications encouraging them to use other Microsoft products when clicking on the Start menu. Many Windows users are already decrying the changes, just another way Microsoft is trying to shove more ads into the operating system. These definitely not ads appear as kind of promotion when users click the Windows buttons on the desktop, for example, to back up your files. So they're trying to get you to basically create OneDrive accounts and stuff like that. So, Yeah, Gizmodo has been unable to test the new ads, though previous reports of beta users from Windows Insider confirmed the feature. According to NeoWin Tech Blog, beta users were able to disable the ads by navigating the settings, personalization, and clicking off show account-related notifications occasionally in Start. According to Microsoft Windows 11 Preview release notes, notifications are only being deployed to a small audience, but will reach more broadly in coming months. In other words, yeah, they're putting a Windows is putting pop-up ads straight up in the fucking operating system. Short-term fix would be using, like open start menu, or I forget the name of it now. Well, I don't. That may not be Windows 11. That might be Windows 10.
Now I'm going to need pop-up blockers for my OS.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, even on Windows 10, you got to go turn a bunch of stuff off, or it'll put ads all over the lock screen and, you know, notifications and stuff like that. If you don't know to go, you know, turn all those personalized, I think it calls it personalization. They're ads. Yeah, I heavily encourage anyone who can start looking at Linux seriously, because Microsoft is going to make their operating system unusable. I mean, it already does tons of data collection. And by the way, for anybody who thinks that, it's you know, it's so they can improve your, you know, they can fix things, and it doesn't really matter what they're collecting. They're collecting your keystrokes if you use Cortana. They're collecting everything you type into the computer if you use Cortana. So keep that in mind. You know, yes, that includes your bank details and your shopping information. Do I think Microsoft is going to do anything nefarious with that information? No. Do I think that Microsoft might get hacked and have that information leaked? Absolutely. I don't think it'll be intentional, but I do think it'll be abused. I also think that Microsoft is primarily doing all this telemetry crap because they don't want to pay beta testers anymore. Apparently, they laid off most of their beta test team, and now they just use the telemetry from people's machines, so they're using their end users as beta testers rather than having beta testers. It's one of the reasons why they don't roll updates out to everybody at once anymore, is so they can see what breaks. And I don't like that. I don't think that's the right way to operate. Now, I do think that you probably will be able to, you know, do shell replacements like the start menu replacers and, you know, files or explorer replacements for your file browser, and basically go get a whole bunch of open source software to install on top of Windows so that you can actually use the operating system if you have to use it because you have your hardware support or software you need or something. But I've been having a hard time finding a Linux that plays nice with the hardware in this particular laptop. So I think the next time I build a machine, I'm just going to be a little bit more mindful about the hardware I get and try to go Linux full-time for at least the major stuff. Probably still keep a, you know, machine, another machine on the side or a virtual machine or something, but because, you know, it is hard to completely get away from Windows, but I mean, shit. You know, ads in the start menu now. It's eventually going to be Idiocracy, you know, where you get to use the center of the screen, but then all around it is just ads constantly playing. You know, if anybody remembers what, you know, the TV in Idiocracy with all the ads just constantly playing around everything you're trying to watch. So, that's what it's going to be in Windows. Thoughts?
Oh, my thoughts are Steam is making it easier for more and more people to ditch Windows.
Well, Steam Deck, certainly. I mean, that's not Windows. So, it's not perfect yet, but it's certainly getting there. So, anyways, last story. Not sure how I feel on this one. It's from TechSpot. Arkansas just became the second state to pass a law requiring under 18s to get parental consent before they open an account on social media platforms. Republican Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders signed the Social Media Safety Act into law, which goes into effect on September 1st, but there's confusion over which companies are actually affected. The law requires social media companies that earned more than $100 million in annual revenue to work with third-party services to verify new account holders' personal information. This is done using, quote, any commercially reasonable age verification method, unquote, or government-issued IDs such as photo ID or driver's licenses. Current account holders won't be affected. The state law, or the law states that social media companies are defined as any online forum that lets users create public profiles and interact with each other through digital content. CNN reports that in the final days of negotiations over the bill, Arkansas lawmakers approved an amendment that it appears to exempt some of the world's biggest social media companies. Given all the concern over TikTok's influence and its links to China's, it's surprising to see that the social media platforms that prevent users to generate short video clips of dancing, voiceovers, or other acts of entertainment in which the primary purpose is not educational or informative are exempt.
What?
That's what it says.
So they pretty much just put in an amendment to make the law worthless.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I can argue Facebook's not primarily informative. It's entertainment. That's how I watch my cat fucking videos. You don't.
Well, that is what the next line of the article says. That would also seem to cover Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, as well as TikTok. But apparently not. Senator Tyler
Deese...
So
everything that we need to be watching 13-year-olds on is exempt.
It's kind of what it says. But at the same time, and I'll get into why I have concerns. Senator Tyler Deese, a lead co-sponsor of the legislation, said, quote, the purpose of the bill is to empower parents to protect kids from social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Snapchat, unquote. Quote, we worked with stakeholders to ensure that email, text messaging, video streaming, and networking websites were not covered by the bill, unquote, Deese added. Other exemptions include social media companies that exclusively offer subscription content and those focused on professional networking and career development, i.e. LinkedIn. Companies that exclusively offer video gaming-focused social networking features aren't covered either, which could include Twitch, despite not really being a social platform, so I think they're doing that to not catch Xbox Live. Arkansas is following Utah in signing a social media law, though the latter's is a lot more extreme. Not only do under 18s need parental permission to create an account, but it also blocks them from using social media between 10:30 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. by default. Parents can change this. Moreover, companies are barred from, quote, using a designer feature that causes a minor to have an addiction to the company's social media platform, unquote. Texas, Ohio, and Louisiana are considering similar social media bills. Law comes at a time when mental health impact of social media on younger users is well documented, blah, 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 blah. So, I don't disagree with saying parents need to be involved with what their kids are doing online. I think they should be. But this doesn't say it only targets kids. Anyone opening a new account on a social media platform has to verify their identity. You want to make a Twitter account, a Facebook account, TikTok, whatever, you have to go through and most likely give them a government-issued ID to create an account, period.
The only real way to do age verification is to apply it to everyone.
I know.
Otherwise, the 18-year-old guy, no, I'm 36. Since 36-year-olds don't need to verify it.
But, okay, so from that means... any account out there has a real identity attached to it. Obviously they're not just going to say, oh, well, this account, you know, XXX Sniper 360 No Scope XXX, we're not obviously not linking that to, you know, 12-year-old Jimmy over there. We're not going to, they're going to retain the link of who it really is.
Yep.
And I think that's going to have other legal ramifications, especially when we've seen, mostly overseas, but when we've seen people have legal responses to dumb Twitter posts. So, like I said, I like the idea of the parents being involved. Should kids be on these platforms unmonitored? Probably not. But I don't know that I like the idea of requiring all social media companies to link a government ID to every account. I mean, you're kind of backdooring a listener's license there, aren't you?
Yeah, because you don't have to pay to use it.
I mean, okay, fair enough. But no, I mean, yeah, I mean, you're basically saying, okay, well, you can't be online without a real identity. You know, either your anonymous social media accounts are dead under this. So if you have an account that's going to be politically active, as an example, there's, you know, it's tied to a real ID. There's no way to do it anonymously.
How long did it take them to discover the idea of libs of TikTok?
A couple years. Somebody had to get interested enough. Because libs of TikTok was going for a while before she got exposed. But, I mean, I get your point.
Okay, from the time of point of when they were looking, because no one's looking for me because I'm not doing anything. I'm not actually on social media. Yeah. Took them weeks, not years, to find them.
I know, but again, is that so? Just because somebody, you can think of examples where people are bad at protecting their, you know, their identity, we just should abandon the idea of anonymous speech online?
Well, it's also not quite anonymous speech online. It's anonymous speech on social networks where they're already not being anonymous. Facebook, yeah, there are a lot of bot accounts. This will actually get rid of a lot of bot accounts on Facebook.
Oh, it might.
We could actually have a living internet again.
Well, just, you know, go look at Twitter. How many people are using their real name? Fuck, we don't use our real names on this.
Nope, and this is actually not covered by that law.
Well, no, it doesn't make enough money, but it doesn't make any money. It costs me money. But again, it is chipping away at that idea of having any anonymous speech online, because every platform of size is going to require you to validate your ID to prove that you're not a kid or that you have parental permission if you are a kid. And again, I'm not against the idea of keeping kids off some of these platforms, because some of the craziness on them, yeah, you probably want to have the parents involved a little bit for what the kids are seeing online. I just, you know, I don't like the idea of requiring everyone who makes an account to validate a government-issued ID.
And what the reading of this law, I'm just saying, BBSs could come back, man.
Yeah, everybody keep
the old internet's going to be coming back.
Hey, the old internet's dead, and the commercial internet won. So maybe it's not a bad thing that they're doing this. I mean, yeah, just, you know what, Madman, that might be it. It might really be okay. We've lost. Commercial internet won. Abandon the internet, move back to BBSs, private messaging boards, and ham radio. Abandon ship! It's lost! The companies took it over. Time to run! No?
Yeah, well, I'm not seeing much of an issue with it myself.
Well, I just don't like the idea that you can't go make a troll account without validating your real name. Because, again, things like political speech, you see how people reacted. I mean, during the 2016, CNN hunted down somebody who made a meme. And now, again, you know, they made it, whoever did it obviously made it possible for them to catch it. You know, if you're going to make a troll account, you want to take some precautions, you know, use Tor, and, you know, maybe make sure that account doesn't have any real ties to a mobile phone or anything that could, you know, be used to identify you outside of, you know, however you're accessing it. So, you know, a little bit of SecOps there, but I don't like the idea of killing the idea of being anonymous online. Because that's effectively what it does. So, anyways, let's do this. Hadouken! Link for Digital Dojo tonight is the archive.org ShmooCon videos. They've got all the videos from the talks posted up into a nice big archive.org playlist. So if, you know, you want to watch the talks from ShmooCon, here they are. Look like there's some decent ones in here. There's a lot in there. And of course, because it's on archive.org, you could pull the whole thing down as a torrent. And because they offer it right on the website, there's not going to be any argument that you're, you know, using a piracy tool to get the video. So that's all I got. Of course, you know, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, Al Hazard, Cyberlard, Psychros, Madman, myself, and Sardonyx. Still no sign of the coffee maker. Madman, closing thoughts.
Oh, bourbon is amazing, and the coffee maker's been unplugged. Like I said, it did not belong on the internet to begin with.
jokes that will never get old. Do you have anything else before I hit sound effects?
Nah, all right. Hit them, we're good.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
But shut up, Wesley.